Welcome back to Rise of the Rule Lords Unchained. It's your compatible and legendary Rule Lord, Pete. And today, I am joined with another return guest, Vanessa Hoskins, co-host of No Direction Podcast, cast member on Roll for Combat, and primary author of the legendary Kineticist class from Legendary Games. How are you doing, Vanessa?
I'm doing great, although I'm a little concerned. Who unchained you? It seems like if there were chains at some point, they had a good reason to be there, so...
There were very good reasons, but I got out of them.
Okay. Thanks so much for having me on. This is going to be fun.
It is going to be fun, because today we're here to talk about not one, but two kineticists. One made by Paizo Official. The playtest is going right now until September 5th. The playtest is online. If you go there, you can try out this brand new kineticist class that they got going on. But for a long time, a kineticist class for second edition has existed in the form of your class, Vanessa, Legendary Kineticist.
It sure did.
And it's been around since... As far as I can remember,
2020. It's been around for about 2 years.
Yeah. So that was just about around the same time that second edition released. So you got on the
compatibility. Yeah, it took us about a year. I am a huge fan, huge fan of the first edition Kineticist. I played a heck of a lot of Pathfinder Society back in the day for first edition, and I had 5 or 6. I don't know. I keep losing count and having to recount all the different builds. And then I'm like, wait, but I also leveled up Kineticists in that one, so it counts. So I played a bunch of different Kineticists and a bunch of different ways and a bunch of different elements. I'm very familiar with the class, and I really, really love it. And when second edition came out at release, I remember getting my core rulebook at PaizoCon, I believe. And, you know, I was definitely at PaizoCon, but I think it was when it came out. It might have been when the playtest came out. I can't remember. I think it was when the official came out. But I turned to Jason Nelson of Legendary Games, because I know that he does a lot of like alternate class builds and other third party class material. I said, Jason, I really want to make a kineticist for second edition. It's not in the core rulebook, and there's no announcements that they're going to make one. And something like this would probably come out next year. So I think we've got at least a year to do some awesome stuff. And he said, you know what? Go ahead and do it. So we put a little team together. It was actually me and two other folks who were working on it. I worked with Anjali, who wrote a ton of third-party stuff for the first edition Kineticist, and he worked with me, like the two of us designed the ideas behind the class together and sort of massaged out how this is going to work in second edition. And then I worked with a newer author at the time, Onyx Tanuki, who did a lot of the skill feats, backgrounds, items, like extra stuff that appear in the Legendary Kineticist book, just to sort of get his feet wet on a class that he also really liked from first edition.
Before we go into the 2E versions, let's take a step back in time and talk about the first edition Kineticist.
Sure.
Because this
wait,
is a
wait, you said we're going to talk about two different Kineticists, and you get we're doing a bonus one? We get three Kineticists.
Three of them. I don't know that. Did they make one for the Unchained book? I don't think so.
No.
It was
no,
just
they did not.
Okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, it came out in Occult Adventures for Pathfinder First Edition. As far as I'm aware, it was a completely unique Pathfinder class. It hasn't been recreated in D&D, as far as I know.
Kind of. So, kind of. Yeah. So D&D 3.5 had a class that came out near the end of its lifespan called the Warlock. And the Warlock was what Pathfinder players might think of as part kineticist and part witch. So it had this idea that you have worked with some otherworldly entity and created some sort of pact for supernatural powers, and you get to do cool stuff. And the one cool stuff that all warlocks could do was Eldritch Blast, which was a non-specific damage type ray that you could just do at will all the time. You could just be like, I just pew, 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 and that's what I do.
Big Kamehameha Burst.
Yes, big Kamehameha Burst. Well, some of them were. And so the Warlock also had all these different, I forget the term that they use, but different abilities that you could unlock every few levels that would either add an entirely new power, like one of them you could get like a Cloak of Shadows that would give you like a fly speed at higher levels and stuff like that. And some of them were direct modifications to your Eldritch Blast. You could turn it into a cone. You could turn it into a fireball type, you know, explosion, things like that. So the idea of a class that could shoot energy at will and then sometimes manipulate it into something else was already kind of out there, but in a different thematic form. And what Paizo did, specifically Mark Seifter, was the main designer on the Kineticist. He said, what if we take that idea and add it to this idea of elementalism? So we could create a class that, for example, is just a telekineticist and moves stuff with their mind. And then someone is a pyrokineticist and they just create fire all over the place. And then it kind of spread from there. And you had a hydrokineticist and a geokineticist and an aerokineticist. And okay, cool. Now I have all these elements. And that's where the word kineticist came from, was the idea that there's all these elements. So this class came about and was pretty unique because at the time, if you wanted to be like a blastery character in first edition, sorcerer was probably the best way to go. There were a couple other ways to get there. But like you can make, for example, a sorcerer who just happened to have like an elemental bloodline for, let's say, bonus to fire damage and take a bunch of fire spells and be like, ooh, I'm the fire elementalist. I'm the fire spellcaster.
Yeah.
Great. The problem was, in first edition, you didn't have scaling cantrips. So you didn't really have there was no good like fire cantrip at first level anyway. So you kind of didn't have like a go-to fire attack you could just do all the time.
Right.
You just had fire spells. And eventually you run out of spell slots. And then that's it. I don't have firepower. So right. The kineticist was cool because they said, well, if we take the caster spectrum, I'm going to use caster spectrum as a term. Yep, I sure am. And you have maximum flexibility and minimal spell casting on the wizard side, where you can change up your spells every single day, but you get fewer spell slots. And then you had sorcerer on the other side, where you only know a handful of spells, but you can cast them more often. But those, that's it. That's all you've got. And when you level, you might be able to change out one, maybe if you're lucky. Those were sort of the two extremes. Kineticist said, let's go further. Let's go past sorcerer and find a new extreme. And took the ideas from the warlock and said, okay, now you basically get a spell-like ability, which works like a spell, right? So you have to focus on all that stuff. Spell-like abilities were actually really unique in first edition, where they didn't provoke attacks of opportunity. You would because there's a ranged attack in there, but like you basically just focused on doing a thing and it would manifest. And they said, let's take spell-like abilities instead of spells and say you get an elemental blast. You get a fire blast or an air blast or an electric blast or a cold blast or whatever it was. And you get to just do this all day. Just like Captain America, I can do this all day. And you did that. And that was the class. I was like, okay, cool. And then to make it interesting, similar to the warlock, you get all of these, what they called infusions and talents are the two words they used. So at that time, an infusion was something you did to change the blast and make it do something else. So if we take fire as our primal example, you could make a big column of fire that maybe was really small at the base, but went really high in the air. You could make, do an actual explosion, like a fireball, but smaller. You could do a big cone of fire. You could shape it in all these different ways. Or maybe you just like lit the person on fire, right? It's like, like napalm blast. And so they changed all these different infusions and all these different things you could do. And that also had all these different elements. So you could do that with earth, you know, and you could do with air. One of the air ones was a cloud. It was just a damaging cloud.
Right.
Kind of like poison fog or something, but it was just air damage bludgeoning you as you just like stood in here and you're like, oh, the air hurts. And it was just a lot of very innovative ways to say, oh, you can do this thing. And how you accomplished all these cool feats. And some of them were just, like I said, there were talents, and some of the talents were just like with fire was you create a wall of fire, right? Or with air, you can fly. Wait, what? Yeah, you can fly as much as you want. You just fly. You have wings of air and you fly around on these wings of air and then you have a fly speed. Good job, you. So they had some utility too that was all elemental themed. And the way that you would use these abilities, either the more exciting talents or the infusions, was you would pay for it by spending something called burn.
Right.
If you've been looking around in the forums and people are like, where's burn? This is what they're missing. Okay.
Yep. People have been
burn is this cool idea.
Talking about that a lot.
Yeah. Well, burn is a really revolutionary idea. And the thing that really set the kineticist apart from any other class out there. And what burn did is it said, okay, here's the concept. The concept is that you are channeling all of this elemental energy directly from one of the elemental planes or some other plane of existence through your body and using your body as a conduit. Now, if you open that conduit a little tiny bit, you can get some energy and it's safe, fine. But if you open that conduit wider, if you're willing to be a little more risky and let more energy through all at once, then you might take burn. It might hurt you. Right. And this is the sort of thing, if you watch those movies where there's a telekineticist and like Eleven from Stranger Things, right? When she does really powerful stuff, her nose bleeds and it like obviously drains her and hurts her.
Yeah, it's not a foreign concept at all. Having special powers and it somehow having some kind of backlash towards you.
Backlash, yeah, to physically hurt you.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what burn did. It did damage, hit point damage to you. The interesting thing is it did non-lethal damage, which was very specific in first edition versus lethal damage, and you had to track it separately. But the reason that was important is because being that you are focusing all this elemental energy through your body, constitution was a very important stat. It was the caster stat, for lack of a better word, for the kineticist. Because what would happen is every time they used burn, they would lose some hit points. So you wanted to have a big pool of hit points so you could use burn more often and do the big cool powers more often.
And it looks like you wouldn't be able to get those hit points back just from regular healing. You had to have overnight.
No, you could only get them from a long rest.
This wasn't just something that you could expend willy-nilly. You actually had pretty intentional about wanting to use it.
Yeah. And so what would end up happening too is there was a mechanic where basically your blasts got stronger. You were more accurate. You dealt more damage with all these blasts, the more burn you had. And so what would happen at the beginning of the adventuring day, you were very healthy. You had tons of hit points and you had an okay blast. You had an okay attack. And then as you kept deciding to use burn and you kept getting weaker, your magic kept getting stronger. These telekinetic blasts, these elemental blasts kept getting stronger. And to the end of an adventuring day, you're like, well, I'm all burned out. I can't use any more burn. But my actual regular pew pew blast is really strong. But, you know, I might have 150 hit points, but 80 of those are gone from burn. Mm-hmm. You know, those are all spent. And so really, I only have 70. And so what often happened to kineticists near the end of the adventuring day when they had a lot of burn, if they took a really big hit at the beginning of the adventuring day, they'd be like, haha, is that all you have? But at the end of the adventure day, they would just collapse and go unconscious. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of nice because it was like, even if you went unconscious, you're like, oh, you just took, you know, 100 points of damage. Are you dead? And you're like, no, I'm just unconscious. You're like, what? You're like, well, you took 180 hit points, but it just went down, but took your hit points, your current hit points, not below zero, but below where your non-lethal hit points were. So you're just unconscious.
Right.
Like, what? This is like, and there were things about that class. It's even confusing to explain it now in kind of a quick fire way that made the kineticist very confusing for folks. They're like, wait, how does burn and I have to, what? And then add on to that.
It's confusing, what if you want to do but I can see why they made it that way.
It was a super cool concept, but yeah, it's like a little bit. And so one of the other mechanics that is like classic to the kineticist is this idea of gathering power. Right. So if you took a moment, again, remember like this conduit through your body that is like spilling out elemental energy. And if you widen it, you get more power, but it hurts you. Yeah. Well, what if you need more energy and you're willing to wait? So what you could do is gather power. And that was like letting it out at a safe speed, but you're just going to hold on to it for a second until you have enough. And then you can do your cool thing and not hurt yourself.
7 episodes of Dragon Ball Z.
Yes, several episodes in some cases. You could actually hold it. This is what's funny. You could hold it for like half of your turn, or you could hold it for your whole turn, or you could hold it for your whole turn and half of your next turn. So when you want to do the really big Kamehameha blast, you would be gathering power for a whole turn. That's your whole turn. You're just like, nope, gathering power. I'm just going to stand here. And then you would wait. And then on your next turn, you're like, okay, on this turn, I'm still gathering power. So that's 3. That's 2 from the first turn and 1 from the second. And you have all of these points of burn that you can ignore up to 3. And then you're like, cool. Now I use it on this infusion to make a big fireball. And also the fireball burns extra hot. And also it's napalmy and it's whatever. And boom, you do the giant fireball blast to kill everybody. And you're like, okay, that didn't hurt me at all. It's fine.
Those are some really interesting mechanics for first edition. Yeah. But second edition, obviously a very different game. So let's talk about how you brought some of those things over to second edition with the legendary assist. So what was your goal when you created the legendary kineticist? When you started off, obviously you wanted to recreate this class that you loved very much, but were you trying to make a one-to-one conversion or just get like the feel of the kineticist from players?
Yeah, I wanted to do as best I could a one-to-one conversion because there were a lot of people at the time who, and I remember seeing them and kind of being one of them, where they're playing a kineticist in a first edition game and their GM and their gaming group is super excited. And they're like, let's go over to second edition. This is so cool. It's the reaction economy. It's easier based. You get a lot more feats and it's really cool. And the whole proficiency system is interesting. And they were like, but I have a kineticist and there's no kineticist. And like I said, they were like, oh, there's an elemental sorcerer. You can play one of those. And it's like, it's not the same though.
Right.
Even with the scaling cantrips, which makes it passable, it just doesn't have the same feeling to it.
Right.
So I wanted to do as close to a one-to-one as I could so that when people played the kineticist in second edition, they really felt like, oh yeah, this is the first edition experience, but in, you know, ported over for second edition. And one of the things I thought was really interesting was the idea of this three-action economy. And I'm like, well, gathering power is definitely an action. Mm-hmm. And most spells are two actions. And I thought, well, okay, so we want to do two actions. I thought, what if infusion was an action and the blast was an action? So the kineticist is slightly better at cantrip blasting than a sorcerer because their blast is only one action. It uses the flourish trait, so you can only do one of those a turn. It's an odd use of the flourish trait. It was a lot of what's in the core rulebook for second edition and how can I make a kineticist out of it. Mm-hmm. These days, I would probably give it its own word. I would probably do a lot of things differently, but this is what I decided was an interesting way to go. So I said, okay, well, you can only blast once on your turn and then you have two other actions to move or do whatever you want, because I also wanted to feel mobile, right? We see Avatar the Last Airbender and things like that, and those kids are running around and jumping off walls and doing all sorts of stuff, and then boo, they shoot out some fire, boo, they shoot out some air, and you're like, yeah, they're very mobile. And in first edition, it was very much stand there, gather energy, shoot a thing, and you basically turreted the whole time until you had to move, and that turn you're like, oh, I can't do anything cool, I can just go pew and that's it, because I had to move and shoot. And then now I'm in position. So once again, I'll gather all the energy, do all the stuff. And I wanted to free it up. The rest of the edition felt so mobile. So I said, well, here's what we can do. We can give them one regular blast. It's just one action, plenty of other turns. And if they want to sit there and turret, they can spend an action to gather energy, spend an action to use an infusion that makes their blast cool, and then use their blast. And they can still get that. I stand there and turret and I'm cool. And it didn't cost me anything. Cool. But what if you wanted to use, what about burn? What do we do? Well, one of the things with burn in first edition that I found as I experienced tables through Pathfinder Society and also just asked fans at large on, I don't know, Reddit and the forums and other places. And I said, when you play a kineticist, what do you do? Do you worry about burn? Do you use it as a currency the way they want you to? Mm-hmm. Or do you always make sure that you've covered your burn through gather energy? And the overwhelming answer was, we always try to gather our energy and we try not to use burn. We're afraid of burn. We don't like it. And a lot of the why was, I don't want to take hit point damage. And in second edition, that seemed like a dangerous thing. Second edition can get a little scary. The wrong creature gets a big crit on you, and all of a sudden you go from full to scary amounts of health really fast. And so even con-based characters who are going to have like maximum amount of hit points for the level, they're in fear of going down a little too quick.
Right.
So I said, well, I want to keep burning, but I want to do something different. And so what I did in Legendary Kineticist is I just turned burn into the stunned condition. So accepting burn, it's just called accept burn. It's a free action. And it says, well, the next infusion that you use on this turn, he is infusion. Mm-hmm. Next infusion you use on this turn, all the infusions are focus point based, right? Because that works nicely with second edition.
Yep.
And so the next infusion you use is doesn't cost you a focus point. That's cool. Okay.
Yeah.
And the idea is if you have to move to get into position, you can't turret, you can move, you can use the infusion and accept burn. You can accept burn and use the infusion and then do your, you know, cone of fire or whatever you're going to do. And what burn did, it was a free action, right? It's a free action. It gave you stunned one on your next turn. You have stunned one, which means at the beginning of your turn, it deducts that many action points from your next turn. So, mm-hmm. So you're getting basically gather energy for free, right? But you're going to lose it later. And if you are already stunned because, you know, someone bonked you or something from, I don't know, a reaction or something, then it just increases the value by one. You're going to pay that eventually. You're going to pay that somehow. And so this is what we did. And it was kind of fun. It worked with the three-action system. It gave you a lot of options. And it was as true to the class as possible. Legendary Kineticist. Oh, that's the other thing I should say. It's built entirely like a spellcaster.
Use cantrips. You use spells and focus points and focus spells. And before the Pathfinder Kineticist came out, focus points always seemed like a really great alternative to the Vancian spellcasting system, which for some listeners who might not know that word, that's the term for the spell slot system that, you know, wizards and sorcerers use, which limits your ability to spellcast.
Yeah, that's where you have so many level 2 spells, so many level 3 spells. So when you're out of level 2 spells, you can't cast level 2 spells anymore.
And they're gone. Whereas with cantrips, you get to use cantrips as many times as you want. But with focus points, you could get some of them back as long as you had a certain pool size by refocusing outside of combat. So I've always been very much in love with the focus spell system. But a new system was come up with the second edition Kineticist. But before we go into that one, I wanted to talk about a couple more of the unique things that you had in your Kineticist.
Sure.
Like the types of elements that you had.
Oh, yeah.
Ether, air, cold, earth, electricity, fire, and water.
Mm-hmm.
So are these all the classic elements from first edition, or did you
sort of plus a couple? Yeah. So first edition had earth, air, fire, water, like your Western classic four, plus aether. Aether was like the energy between the elemental planes that kept them at bay from each other, from bleeding into each other too much. And you would basically pull on that. And that's where the telekineticist did their thing. So they grabbed these strands of aether and would wrap them, you know, mystically around an object, and then they could move it. And so that was sort of where aether came from in first edition, how they lured their way into it, just to squeeze it in there. And one of the things they also did is they said, well, if you're an air kineticist, at first level, you can either choose an air blast or an electric blast. And if you're a water kineticist, you can either choose a water blast or a cold blast. And it was like, well, that's cool that there's a choice. And I like that a lot. But also then it means that you have two damage types and two thematic differences. And some of those utility talents would also say things like, well, you have to have the cold blast to make sheets of ice. Okay. Actually, I think that one was like slippery ground. And it's like, well, if you have water, then the ground's just wet. And if you have ice, then the ground's icy and it's the same effect. And I was thinking, wouldn't ice be way more slippery than just the ground is wet? But there were other things you had to have one blast or the other. And I can't remember them off the top of my head. Mm-hmm. But I also thought it was like, well, you know what? Since we're retooling this, instead of saying, oh, there's five elements, let's say there's seven. And we'll just pull cold and we'll pull electricity out and make them their own element, their own thing. And then that let me really focus and say, how is an electrokineticist different than an aerokineticist? How is a cryokineticist different than a hydrokineticist?
Right.
I really come up with ways to just ramp up the theme on these new types by splitting them out.
And then with these different elements, you gave them elemental conduits and elemental defenses. So how did those work?
So the conduit is, so if you're familiar with the playtest, I'm going to compare and contrast a lot from this point forward, honestly. Sure. If you're familiar with the playtest, they call them gates. Like I said before, there was a conduit going through your body. And they're calling them gates. Like there's an actual tiny portal somewhere in your body that you're just carrying around that the energy flows through. And I still call them conduits because that is how, I can't remember if that was a term from first edition, but that's how I always conceived of it. That you are the catalyst of energy bringing forth that energy from another plane. And so what I decided to do is just use conduits as a way of saying you get this energy from elsewhere. And because it is third party and I want it to work in a lot of systems, I'm a little bit nonspecific about where that energy comes from. Sure. I think I talk about the planes a little bit, plane of fire, plane of air, that there's a note in there somewhere that this can come from wherever, you know, fits with your world. And so I did that. And then the defenses was a part that I thought was really cool. So I thought, since we have seven elements now, I wanted to stay where I could as faithful to the special defenses that a first edition kineticist got, which were pretty neat. But then, you know, just updated and balanced for second edition. And for the most part, I think I did pretty good on that. So, for example, you would get like damage reduction against physical damage in first edition if you were an earth kineticist because your body became hard as a rock. And in second edition, that just becomes resistance to physical damage from everything except adamantine. And that is a constant. You just get it. You're just extra tough against physical damage. And there's all sorts of things that each one has a unique one. I can go into any of them that you're curious. And then in the kineticist playtest that Paizo just released, the only special defense that I really see them giving besides like an armor proficiency is you do get resistance. So at third level, you start to gain resistance equal to your level with your element, which, let's put a pin in that. I think there's some issues there, but we'll talk about it. And then you get full immunity to your element at 17th level. And there's also some caveats because of how they've done it. And some of them are cool and some of them are like questionable.
So then I want to talk about have you go over infusions because sure. You've talked about it a couple times and want to make sure that we have a good baseline of understanding about how they work. So talk to us about the infusion ability class.
Sure. So for the legendary kineticist, an infusion works where it is a focus spell. And the focus spell doesn't do anything except modify the next blast you cast before the end of your turn. The spellcasting is only one action. The blast is one action. So an infusion plus a blast is two actions. And every time you use an infusion, it's a focus spell. So you're spending a focus point. As I said, with the exception that you either gather energy, which is one action, and says, if you cast an infusion before the end of the turn, it doesn't cost you a focus point. Or you just accept burn for free, and it also doesn't cost you a focus point then, but you're going to be stunned one on your next turn and left with fewer things to do.
And then you also have burn, which you talked about, and you have the gather power ability right at the start. So I think that now we're at a point where we can start to go into the kineticist class with made by Paizo. Mm-hmm. And honestly, one of the first things that I noticed wasn't immediately how different they were, but how similar they were between the two classes.
They come off the same source material, you know?
Paizo did and what you did are pretty similar, at least at the start. So they're both constitution-based classes. So they decide to keep that. And that was something that you came up with, even though in first edition, they didn't have...
They didn't have key ability scores.
Yeah, they didn't have key abilities.
I mean, but I consider them a spellcaster. That was my interpretation of them. And so... Mm-hmm. Like a spellcaster without spells. And how does that work, right? Focus point and cantrip specialized spellcaster. And so I built them on a spellcaster chassis. They gain the similar perception. They gain like the similar starting saves. They gain their attack proficiencies and armor proficiencies at the same rate. And I built them like a spellcaster that instead of using intelligence or wisdom or charisma as their spellcasting stat, they use constitution because of the nature of how they cast their spells. And so some folks might think, well, what about your spell attack? Is that constitution? Yeah, it sure is. And that might seem odd, but then you think, well, how do you attack someone with wisdom then? Or how do you attack someone with charisma? You're like, no, I am so present in this room. I am very accurate. I believe I am accurate so much that I am. I'm like, that doesn't actually work.
Of all of them, constitution makes the most sense to me because it's how well your body stands up to controlling these unnatural forces.
Yeah, and if it can stand up really well, you can focus them in the right direction better. And if it doesn't, maybe it, you know, shoots off in the wrong, you know, just a few degrees to the right and now you've missed.
Your hit points aren't terribly different. It starts off with eight.
Six per level instead of eight per level, yeah.
So you made him just a little bit more squishy.
A spellcaster.
As a spellcaster.
So before we can go down the line and compare, and I think we should.
Yeah.
But before we do that, I'd say let's set up a quick ground rule. I'm gonna posit a theory and you tell me if you think it's right.
Okay.
The kineticist playtest by Paizo for second edition is a martial character.
Well, in fact, they said that in their survey. I was gonna ask you that. Ask you about that later. Yeah, I guess we can go into that now.
Yeah, they build it completely different. They say, you know what? If you're just blasting the same blast all the time, we have cantrips for that. That's boring. You know what? We're just going to give you a weapon that deals fire damage. We're just going to give you a weapon that is made of air. Why not? And that was their approach to it, which I think was really interesting. Like, I'll tell you, even though I wrote my own version, I am intrigued by Paizo's approach to this. And I think it's extremely interesting. And I really want to play one. In fact, I made one for a playtest last night that got canceled at the last minute because the GM wasn't feeling well. And I cannot wait to try this out because it seems like a really cool concept to me.
Yes. Here's Paizo's quote from the playtest survey. The Kinesis was designed to work primarily like a martial character, to give it a distinct theme different from spellcasters and to avoid some complex spellcasting, which to me, as someone who is primarily a martial-based player, when I do get to play, which is hardly ever because I'm GM, I love for things to be simple. And to me, that's what this feels like. If we go into, you know, how it works, the gather action, which both classes have, your class and their mm-hmm. class have, the gathering the element is, for all intents and purposes, like reload. It's kind of just like a bit of a slowdown to your action. So you're not just like pew, 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 a machine gun of fire, electricity, or water. Mm-hmm. But in doing that little bit of a slowdown, you get to do something more powerful a little bit later. It's the same for it's like the difference between a longbow and a crossbow. Crossbows do heavier damage, but you have that reload, whereas with a longbow, you have a zero reload, but you do a little bit less damage. In a martial sense,
sort of,
if that makes sense.
It also reminds me of like panache, because there's a lot of kineticus has a lot of abilities with this overload keyword, this yeah. overload trait that says that, hey, after you use this, you don't have your elemental anymore and you have to then like gather it once again. And that's where you're yeah. saying it's like, kind of like a reload. And to me, it's almost like panache in a swashbuckler, where having your element is something you have or you don't. And if you yeah. don't have it, the basic and easiest way that you had from level one is to gather energy and then you have it again. And yeah. they also provide some interesting options in the class itself to gather as part of other actions or gather as a reaction and all things, sorts of things like that. So you can save on your action economy a little bit in certain circumstances.
It definitely does have the feeling of a very simplified spellcaster version of it. Mm-hmm. Admittedly, though, a very, very squishy one, because one thing, again, that's kind of similar between yours and theirs is they're not very good with weapons. They're only trained with simple and unarmed attack, which is something that your class did as well. They yeah. are only trained in light armor and unarmored defense, which both of your classes.
What's interesting to look at, though, is not just the armors that they use, but where the proficiencies scale up and when you get right. new proficiency bumps. And so, again, Legend of Kinesis is just a spellcaster chassis, and all of the primary spellcasters have the same or very similar. The only one that steps outside of that a little bit is like the Alchemist does, and the Bard does a tiny bit. But when I was looking at this class, the Kineticist playtest class, it is very similar to an Alchemist in some ways, and it is also very, very similar to a Ranger in some ways. And the Ranger is another one of, like you said, it's a martial class, and a Ranger is known for switch hitting, right? Sometimes they're dual wielding weapons, sometimes they're shooting with a bow, and they'll switch back and forth at need. And the Kineticist does that by default. When you have your energy gathered, you have two weapons at the same time in the same hand, and one is a martial weapon and one is a ranged weapon, and they have different rules. And so that's really interesting. So I was taking a look at the Alchemist and the Ranger as things to sort of compare to say, well, where does this Kineticus playtest sit on that, you know, spellcaster to martial spectrum? And they're definitely more on the martial side, but they do have a few things that put them in that Alchemist era. Like, because Alchemist has bombs, right? And you're like, well, right. they needed attack rolls, they need stuff like that to function properly. And so they kind of fit in that little niche. Somewhere between an Alchemist and a Ranger, not quite as martial as a Ranger, but not quite as hybrid as an Alchemist.
And then one thing I'm pretty curious about your perspective too is the saving throws, because you and Paizo landed on the exact opposite end of the spectrum for them.
Yeah, we sure did.
They chose expert in fortitude, expert in reflex, trained in will. And you did the exact opposite, trained fortitude, trained reflex, expert in will.
Sure did.
So what, What went behind your choices, and what do you think Paizo's going with theirs?
So I think Paizo is definitely using a more classic Marshall lineup. If you're in the front lines and you're a Marshall class, generally Marshalls don't have great will saves. They usually have either a good fortitude or a good reflex save. In this case, they're giving you a pretty good start on both. And because of how the stats line up, and this is the other thing I thought was interesting, because of how the stats line up, your fortitude save as your key ability score is likely to be absolutely amazing. And in fact, they don't shrug on that. You get to legendary by level 15. They are starting you on expert, your master by 7, and your legendary by 15. They are making sure that is like the thing you do is fort saves. You are so darn hardy. And then because you will probably presumably be using ranged attacks, but we'll get into that in a minute, you probably want a decent dex. So let's just assume you have a decent dex. So that's your reflex save. So if you start off really nicely on reflex saves, then and have a decent dex, those are going to be a pretty good defense for you. Now, reflex saves only get up to master, but you also get to master by level 11. So only about half, if you're going from 1 to 20, half of your career you're at expert and half your career you're at master. And that's pretty good in my book.
Let's get into a couple of the big mechanics with it. We already touched about one of them, but the big one is the gate, which is where you pull your energy. Yeah. With Paizo playtest, there are three distinct gates right now. There's the dedicated gate, which is where if you choose one particular element, you're going to get really strong with them by being able to choose 3 feats at first level. Dual feat, you get 2 feats, so you'll have a little bit more versatility, a little bit less power. In universal gate, you can choose any gate that you want, but you'll only get 1 first level impulse feat. And, you know, it kind of fits more with sort of Avatar, The Last Airbender thing where...
Yeah, it definitely does.
You're either going to be really good at something or you're going to be sort of good at everything.
Yeah, Avatar would basically have that dedicated gate, or if you are the Avatar, you get the universal gate. And yes. I don't know that they have any use for dual unless they start adding electricity back in there so you can take fire electricity.
Well, yeah. As they got more powerful, a lot of them seemed to have like a dual gate, like
water and
firebenders
ice.
That got to shoot the electricity, ice, or bloodbending.
Oh,
anyway.
Bloodbending. Oh, gosh. Yeah.
Even Toph
discovered metal bending, so then you had earth and metal.
Exactly.
So I could see, and we know that they're coming out with metal as another plane, another type of kineticist you can be. And I think this is a really brilliant choice, honestly.
Yeah.
I love it. Yes. So in first edition at 7th level, you got expand element, and you could either choose any of the other elements you hadn't previously chosen, or you could choose the one you already have. And if you choose the one you already have and double down on it, you got a bonus feat. And they're kind of using that idea here too. I did something similar in that I made, it was 6th or 7th level, I can't remember, but there's an expand element feat that you can take multiple times. And each time you just get another conduit to another element and you get their blast. You don't get their defense, but you get their blast for free. And then you can take all their feats and stuff. Yeah. So I did that too, but in mine, if you wanted all 4, like, you know, classic Avatar elements, you're going to have to take that feat 3 times. So I thought this is a great way to do that. I find the bonus feats really interesting. In the playtest, they give us 4 types of these impulse feats for each element. And because you get 3 bonus feats, you automatically start with 3 of the 4 of them. Mm-hmm. And if you want, you can also use your first level feat you get to pick up the last one. So they really want to make sure that you feel like the absolute master of your element if you just dedicated yourself to one.
That is one of the big, I think, distinguishing bits about this class compared to really almost any other that I've seen is that this class is feat crazy. It's got not just, you know, sort of these kind of like general feats, but multiple feats for each element. So like in total.
Oh, and they ain't even done. They've got 2 more elements to add. And also Paizo likes to take just the feats that they want you to try out and give feedback on. So I'm sure there are some in here that are, for all other intents, mundane, that are maybe quality of life stuff where you're like, oh, you have this and that makes this a little easier to use.
Right.
But it doesn't, it's not interesting, right? It's useful, but it's not interesting. And so they don't tend to put those kinds of feats in the playtest unless those feats or abilities are integral to the class and how it operates. So they're going to give you the more wazoo. Does this work? Is this good? Is it too good? Is it not good enough? Is this feat level 6, but is about the power of a level 4 feat? Like, what do you think? And so they are a little bit more careful about doing that. One thing I thought was really interesting is each element has those 4 first level feats, but they don't have any second level feats. Because you can take a first level feat at second level if you want. Yeah.
And I mean, there's more than enough to take, but there's a lot. So then another thing that they have for everyone is Elemental Blast, which is a pretty core part of it. And
so here's what's interesting.
Yes.
And I'm sure this was done on purpose, but I don't love it. So like we talked about before, when you have Gather Element, you now have the element. Cool. And I think I misspoke earlier that I said you basically have a weapon. You don't have a weapon, right? You have a blob of energy. You have water swirling around you. You have a gentle breeze. You got a ball of mud, whatever. You have elemental power.
Right.
But you can't do anything with it till you shape it. And the interesting thing is Elemental Blast can be used as melee or ranged. It's one action. And it's like you have 2 weapons. But the key part of this is it's not a strike. I'm going to say that again. You can all it does when you use Elemental Blast is allow you to strike with either the melee or ranged version, which are statted out like weapons for your element. Mm-hmm. But it's not a strike. So if you have something like Haste that says you get to make an extra strike, you can't use Elemental Blast because Elemental Blast is an ability that lets you strike, but it's not a strike. And so I thought that was a misstep because there are so many things that are like, and then you can strike. And you're like, oh, well, I'm a kineticist, so I guess I could kick him.
Normal fist.
I got a ball of fire in my hand, but I'm not allowed to use it for my free strike, even though I could turn this fire into, like an agile finesse melee weapon or like a 60-foot, ray or something. My free strike can't be either of those. I can just, kick you in the shin and hope for the best.
The blast can benefit by hand wraps of mighty blows, which is interesting. So that helps with scaling. But yeah, if you could get extra strikes or something, it's, like it kind of switches between that martial feel and then into the spellcaster world where spellcasters can't, get the benefits of haste for a strike because spells aren't strikes.
And like even their cantrips are 2 shots and stuff like that. But like we didn't build a spellcaster here, right? That's a martial. This Paizo even said this is a martial class.
Right.
But it's a martial class that doesn't have a weapon that they can use at any given point in time. Now, because you're using hand wraps of mighty blows to enchant and put runes on and do all sorts of fun stuff in order to make your elemental blast more powerful, I guess if you kick him in the shin, you still have a +2 striking flaming kick. But at the same time, that's not your thing. Like, I would be really disappointed. I'd be like, that's not my thing. My thing is this elemental blast. I'm holding it. It's right here. And they give you an option for that. But this feels like a weird feat tax.
Yeah.
So they give you an option at first level called Elemental Weapon. This is, when you gather your energy, it can just be a weapon. Just choose a simpler martial weapon and you're automatically proficient in it. It just has to be common. And now you're just holding that weapon. But it has to be one-handed. Which makes me wonder, can I do bows? Because bows are 1+ handed, which that has a 1 in it. Does that count? Or is that more than 1 hand, but less than 2 hands? Is it 1.5 hands? I don't know. They talk about ranged weapons with ammunition. So that seems like a bow might work. But are they only talking about hand crossbows? Like there's a lot of questions I have there about how this works. And at the end of the day, they could just avoid all of that by saying, when you have your element gathered, you have access to these 2 elemental blasts, one which is melee, one which is ranged, and you have it all the time. And the fact that you now have 2 weapons in 1, reminds me of the inventor, is pretty cool. Because you can be like, now I can, take this big chunk of earth that I just summoned out of nowhere and forcefully bash you with it. Or I can try to hurl it at a range increment of 20 feet because it's big and heavy. I've got options. And I don't understand. I guess I just really don't understand.
It is going to be a little weird to, like, players going to need to kind of determine what that weapon is going to be each time, unless they feel like having the weapon table with them all the time so that they can say, okay, this time it's a scythe. Now this time it's a dagger. And how did my stats fit in with that? They're going to probably have to choose something, yeah. and that'll be the weapon.
If they take elemental weapon, yeah.
Yeah.
But it's just so weird. It also, like, changes how the weapon works in sort of odd ways. I just feel like...
I get what they're trying to do, though. It's...
Yeah.
It's kind of like having a light, like, well, maybe not a lightsaber, but I get it. The theme is, like, you want to have your electricity person put their hands together and whoosh, and there's a, you know, a sword in their hand.
Made of electricity.
Yeah. Like, that's what you want to do.
And that's what that feat does. But without that feat, you just have a ball of electricity that you can't use unless it's your turn and you spent an action on it.
Yeah.
And I don't know. There are so many other support abilities and stuff in the game that let you get a free strike. Even just, I said the basic of haste is like, oh, I can stride, step, or strike. You're like, and most people I know use it for that free strike if they don't have to get in position or something. And so I'm like, well,
I'm you curious, can't strike with this. Do you think this might work better if it had sort of the imbueness of the Magus? Someone has like a normal weapon using their kinetic ability to make their sword fiery or something.
100% yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was one of the infusions that you could get in the first edition Kineticist that was pretty popular. I have one that mimics that in second. The big question mark when you do that, and this is why it becomes a little complicated and why I don't think they did it in this case, is now you have to deal with how much damage the weapon does and how much are you really adding. If you're only adding a D6 as if there's an elemental rune on it, that's... fine. It's really not that much more powerful. I mean, it's 3.5 points of damage more powerful on average, but it's okay.
Yeah.
Honestly, I think the fix for this is just say that when you gather your element, you have access to a weapon called Elemental Blast, and the stats of that weapon are different, but you can use it for melee or ranged attacks. Like, I don't know, like a throwing weapon, but it has return on it for free. Mm. And that way you can say, I've got water swirling around me and I'm going to lash out at it at range, or I'm going to whack you in melee and it doesn't matter. I still have this water. And when all of a sudden I have another class that goes and you get a free strike, you're like, cool, like a champion can do it. You're like, cool, smack. And it's like, oh, okay, I've got the water out already. And I think that would solve a lot of these weird questions about how this works. But there's a lot of things about this that tells me that... I don't know if they're trying to do too many things or what, or afraid too many things would have be like too potent. Like, why didn't they just do that? Do they think that that would be too broken and why? The other thing I was thinking about that I want to get into at the beginning, we talked about how the key ability is Constitution. Mm-hmm. There is nothing in the game that lets me attack with Constitution.
Right.
And when I have an Elemental Blast, I have a melee weapon, which traditionally uses strength, or a ranged weapon, which traditionally uses dexterity, and neither of those are Constitution. So I am always like one boost behind, essentially, in my main attacking stat forever. And it hampers this class across all 20 levels. You cannot catch up.
One other thing I'm curious about is I couldn't wrap my head around adapt element, the usefulness of it.
Yeah.
Especially having gather as two actions when normal gather element is one action.
Well, it is a little odd, isn't it? So adapt element's two actions. You have to have a hand free. You can only do it with things within 10 feet of you. Sure. And it has to be unattended or by a willing creature. Okay. And all of a sudden I'm like, what is all this? To me, this is like the elemental version of prestidigitation, mm-hmm. right? There's a couple things that you can kind of do with it that are really non-combat that I guess you could do this. And I'm not 100% sure where and how this would be useful other than in like extremely specific circumstances.
Right.
If you're an Alkenstar and there's a cannon and you see a fuse and you're pretty close to it, but for some reason you can't just like fire blast it, I suppose you could move the torchlight on the wall over to the fuse and then light it. Maybe that would be more subtle and the guards wouldn't catch you and you could set off the cannon randomly and like cause a distraction. I don't understand if there's like a door that you can't quite reach that's like propped open with a rock and you're restrained somehow and can't reach over to grab it, but you have a hand free because you have to for adapt element, but you can't reach it. Maybe you can pull the rock from the door so the door shuts. Like, I don't know either. It gives you some interesting sounding things, but there are so many restrictions on it that at level one, it's like, this is a for fun ability. This is I'm going to mess around during party downtime and be like, I'm making rocks levitate in my hand because I can. And you're like, all right, cool.
Then this brings us to what I think is probably one of the biggest topics of conversation around this playtest, which is the lack of burn. So as you said,
oh, yeah,
there is no constitution and there is nothing that really grants you a bonus. So the whole point of having the constitution was having that burn so that you used up part of your life force to have more powerful blasts. And it doesn't seem that that is really replicated here.
Not even a little bit replicated.
Not even a little. So
here's what constitution does for you. It affects your class DC.
Yeah.
So all of those impulse abilities you have, some of them deal damage or a status effect or something, right? And so if you take one, let's say that takes damage. So Air has this one called Aerial Boomerang that reminds me of a Sonic Boom from Street Fighter, where you literally throw this giant boomerang of air in 60 feet. And then on the next turn, it comes back and it deals slashing damage to everything in this big line. So it's a big line attack that you get to do twice. And it does a little bit of damage. Well, it's a reflex save against your class DC. And there's a bunch of these in here that are like that Furious Cyclone. And it does all this bludgeoning damage. And they make a reflex against your class DC. So all of these cool area effect abilities and other sort of more interesting than just I whack it with elemental blast sort of powers use class DC and and some sort of save to resist them. So you're like, okay, well, that's useful. That's something. Okay, we'll use constitution for that. And there's a couple of them in there that are like there's an aura you can get and it's like, oh, the aura does bad things. Yeah, that's cool. Every class has an aura and some of them are pretty neat. But like you don't want to hit your allies. So there's a feat you can get where you can shape the aura and exclude a number of, you know, creatures equal to your constitution modifier. And you're like, all right. So it's got a couple uses. But unless all you're doing, so here's where I'm getting into the game design part. Unless all of you are doing is aerial boomerangs and furious cyclones and other AoE save against this ability type stuff, kind of like a spellcaster, you're not really going to get that much out of constitution other than a big old pile of hit points and the best constitution save, you know, this side of the inner sea. But what's interesting is that their class DC is just like a marshal. Right? It starts at trained. It doesn't get to expert until 9th level, whereas a spell DC for a spellcaster, you get at 7th. And then finally, you're up to master at 17th, and spellcasters are already masters by 15th. And then spellcasters go, hey, I'm legendary by 19th, and you're never going to reach there. And they're only like 2 levels difference there in the middle. And sure, you don't get to the highest DCs at the end of the game, where a lot of people don't ever survive to play. But what this tells us is they are lagging behind in that class DC, and then you have like constitution is the only thing that's keeping it up there, and spellcasters are doing far more damage with their 2 action AoE abilities, and a lot of these have that overflow trait that we talked about, and overflow says, guess what, you've no longer gathered your element, you used it all up, you got to go gather it again. So in essence, a lot of these are 3 action abilities if you consider the action tax of having to gather again to do cool stuff. So I look at these and I'm like, well, you're doing less damage than a spellcaster with a lower DC than a spellcaster and more actions than it takes with a spellcaster. And then I remember, oh, that's right, you're a marshal. And then I wonder why strength and dex aren't your class key abilities when that's what you theoretically would be using most of the time to attack.
Yeah, it does seem like if this is the direction that they're going to do, might as well make it strength or dex. But so I'm wondering, is there a way to bring that back into second edition? Putting on your game designer hat, what do you think might be able to bring that bit of kineticist burn power back to get this where it needs to feel like you're getting that boost out of constitution?
Sure. So one of the things is that there's no resource here other than I have to gather again, right? Which is purposeful. It's very, very purposeful and obvious looking at all these feats and things that someone somewhere in the game design room said, this class isn't going to use focus points. And you go, well, marshals have focus points all the time. Like monks use it to do big old key blasts and stuff. And you're like, no, this class isn't going to use them. Okay. What are they going to do? They're just going to have these impulses instead. The impulses are going to be like a focus spell, but because you didn't spend a resource that you may or may not get back, they're not as powerful. Okay, fine. But what ends up happening is that Now you've got the situation where it's just, it's a subpar thing. And you're like, oh, all those, you know, even at a low level, all those goblins are in the hallway and I can hit them with this big aerial boomerang line. That's cool. And maybe you're, I don't know, level five and you have access to lightning bolt or something, your sorcerer does, and you sit there and you're like, aerial boomerang. And it does slightly more damage because, you know, every two levels, it does an extra D4 of damage. So it's 3D4 now. And you shoot this boomerang down and it does a tiny amount of damage. And you're like, oh, well, hold on. My last action's to gather energy so I can do something next turn. And then the sorcerer's like, cool, lightning bolt, psh, and zaps them all. And they all fall down dead. And then, except like two of them. And you're like, oh, wow, that was spectacular. And then like two of them made their saves. They didn't take that much damage. But then your boomerang comes back for another 3d4 and maybe it knocks them over. And you're like, ugh. And I understand the balancing of it, right? I understand that when you do this, you're like, oh, you're not using a resource. They're using a resource they're never going to get back. So obviously their lightning bolt is more powerful than your aerial boomerang. Well, sure. But the problem is, most of these AoE spells I see them doing are trying to lean into the blaster of yore, and we're not that anymore. We're not a blaster anymore. We're a marshal. We've evolved and just said, hey, we do this all the time. So here's what I would do. If you will be so bold as to let me spell is what I would do.
Let's
here's what I would do. I would say constitution doesn't need to be your key ability score anymore. And everyone's going to be like, but tradition, I'm like, yeah, but you don't have burn, right? And maybe you could have burn, and I'm going to get to that in a second, but you don't have burn. So let's do this. Let's say, okay, we're going to make strength or dex your key ability. What? Because you're either going to be like, I'm going to hit things over the head, or I'm going to be super fancy and fast, and I'm going to use, you know, my agility and grace to hit things.
Right.
And so you're probably going to want to pick one of those two. There's even a first level feat already that basically says, if you take this feat, all of the blasts, all the melee blasts have finesse, and all of the range blasts have a thing called, I think it's brutal. I want to get
brutal.
This.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which says on a ranged attack has brutal, you use strength to calculate your attack roll instead of dexterity, which is awesome. If I'm a giant throwing a boulder, I definitely want a brutal boulder that I just hurl at you really fast, really hard, because I'm so darn strong. And so I think that's cool. But that means that you can do a strength or dex build and not be so multi-attribute dependent or mad, as we like to say in nerd circles. And this class is already a little mad, right? Because you have strength or dexterity. You're going to need to invest in one or the other or both in order to be any good at blasting, unless you stand around right. doing 3d4 damage at fifth level with your boomerang. So you're going to need something. So I would just make one of those the key ability. Let you have strength or dex, level 18 from the start. And if you don't want to split the difference, maybe you pay the feat tax and everything's finesse and everything's brutal and you can just use strength or dex, whatever you want on any blast that you have. Sure. Yeah. Then you play like the monk does. So the monk uses strength or dexterity, but they still use wisdom for their class DC. It's a weird thing that makes them extra special multi-attribute dependent. But then you say, look, constitution is still in there. And if you want to be good at all this class DC stuff, because you're going to get a decent amount of it, you're going to need to invest in some constitution, which as a marshal, you kind of want to do anyway, because theoretically you're frontlining it. Cool. So then you just make con sort of the secondary key ability score, even though that doesn't really exist. Then now you've got a really good attack roll. Even if the attacks stay the same, you get expert at 7, where most marshals are picking up at 5, but you still get master at 13, where most marshals are getting it anyway. So, okay, there's a couple levels in there that are going to be rough. Maybe you just go the 1-5-13 route as anyone else. All right, cool. So we fix that. Already the weapon specialization, greater weapon specialization, when you get criticals, all that stuff is the same as most marshals. Keep it the same. And here's what you do. You go, well, what about all these abilities? Here's what I would do. You got a boomerang of air, right? That's cool. It doesn't do any damage. Not any that anyone is going to like write home about, right? Oh, but it's a 60-foot line at level 1. That's pretty cool. It is. So here's what I would do. I would say, let's keep the boomerang. Let's keep the line. And let's just make it trip. Essentially, just everyone that gets hit by this takes a tiny bit of damage and makes a reflex save or whatever. And if they succeed, they're fine. And if they fail, oh, you're knocked prone.
Right.
And kind of take a similar debuff and buff stance with a lot of these impulses. And then what you're going to end up with is a cool martial class that also has AoEs that are more debuffy and buffy than they are, like, just like their auras. Their auras are all debuffs and buffs mostly. Some of them are a tiny bit of damage, but a lot of them are like air is you move, you get a 5-foot status bonus to your speed, and any allies who start their turn in the aura get a 10-foot status bonus to their speed. That is...
So almost a support martial.
A support martial. Yes, build it like that. So what happens then is, yeah, your class DC is important, but it's not as crucial as it was before. And yeah, and so I would do something like that.
I like that approach because it matches a lot more with what I think a more modern audience is thinking about with Avatar The Last Airbender, where people are either like moving around really fast, shooting out, you know, really quick attacks, or they're, you know, standing real strong and shooting air and earth. So that makes a lot of sense. But now how would you bring burn?
I'm so glad you asked. Okay, I'm going to take a little inspiration. I'll tell you exactly where I got it from, is the Inventor. Inventors have these abilities that are unstable. Unstable means you probably can't do anything unstable again until you've had a chance to cool the heck down and like repair your equipment. And then that takes 10 minutes, and then you can do unstable stuff again. And usually those are your big cool things. So either have things that are unstable, or what I like, I would just say... You can become like you can accept burn. I would still call it that. I would still make it a free action. And I would be like, on your next thing you do, so on your next elemental blast or your next impulse, you get blank. And maybe it's a +1 status bonus to hit, to damage, and to, you know, your class DC. Maybe at higher levels, it turns into a +2. There's already a progression on how much status bonus they expect you to have at any given point in time. Now, usually you have to turn to your full spell casty buffer person and be like, please cast heroism on me. I want to be cool this fight. But, you know, instead, what if you had a way to say, this thing I'm doing right now is super important. I would like to accept burn. And until the end of your turn, you get a +1, +2, +3 scaling. So the high levels, you're like +4 for a turn. And you do something cool. And then like after that, you're burned out. And I would literally give... I don't know. A debuff is rough because those are all minus your DCs, but you could just say that you're burned out and can't use burn again until you recuperate for 10 minutes. Literally just chill and like have a glass of water or drink from your canteen, stare at the clouds, whatever you want to do, and just relax for 10 minutes. And then you're no longer burned out.
And yeah, that's not a new concept with these classes. Barbarian has it. The Oracle has a negative effect associated with. So I don't think that it would be bad to have a negative effect associated with a higher level of power if they wanted to go.
Yeah, if you wanted to, like a little +1 or something helps the math a tiny bit. Some people would be like, it's a huge bonus. People that go on and on about the math behind the Inspire Courage is overpowered or whatever. But I think having it for till the end of your turn or one ability or whatever is great and have some sort of negative. Some negatives could be slowed. Some negatives could be stunned. Some negatives could like that don't affect the math. So I think you're burned out, right? You can't use burn again until you recuperate. And then also while you're burned out, you have... some penalty. Can you not do overflow anymore? Is that like too much for you? Nah, that takes away the action economy of the class. I don't like that one. Strike that one for the record. No, not really. That's funny. But like something you can't. Do you have a 5-foot penalty to your speed? Like something that just shows that you're just like, oh my dude. Okay, that was a lot. I went a little overboard there, and it's fine. We're gonna get through the rest of this fight, and then I'm gonna go sit over there for 10 minutes, and I'll be fine. Like even just instituting something like that, that feels like you're pushing yourself past your limit. Cause that's what burn is all about. You know, it was reflected before as non-lethal hit point damage that you'll, sleep off that night. In Legendary Kineticist, I thought of it as just stunned. It was just an action economy switch of like, well, you didn't gather energy, so you're going to pay for that later. I think they can do it that way. And that way, what you can also do is, if you have either a really important strike with your kinetic blast, right? The enemy's getting away and this is the last shot you're going to get before they go around a corner and we're going to lose them in the crowd. You can use it then. If you're going to use one of your abilities where you're relying on your class DC, which like if it's based on con and that's not your key ability, is going to be lower on average. Cool. Maybe you just need to bump it up. Maybe that's all it does. Maybe burn is specifically for those class DC abilities to say, usually they're less potent than a spellcaster, but when you use burn, all of a sudden they're more potent. Maybe they do double damage and increase the class DC by 2. Maybe they just go, this is your big one, right? You can like throw a air boomerang all you want, but this is the big boomerang, right? This is the really good one.
This is what you say for the big bad in that climactic.
And you're going to use this once in the fight and it's going to be super cool. And then you are going to need to take a timeout. And I think that's a way they could introduce burn without having to deal hit point damage and without having to do a, you know, mess with any other DCs. Cause you don't want to be like, well, you're fatigued until you're red. Like no one wants that. You're like, I get to be cool for one round to really be terrible the rest of the fight? No, thank you. But I think doing it something where you just get a short turn buff and that's it. You got a one turn. This is the important one. You got a big buff and now go rest.
Yeah. Well, I think that would be great. I would love to see it. I think that fits great with a lot of flavorful, superpowered kind of people that I see, you know, Jean Grey, 11 that we talked about, where you just really need that final bit of power, but it's going to take a bit of a toll. I think that's fine. Maybe there's some players who would think that's a stretch too far, but I don't. But anyway, Vanessa, it's been great having you look over this. We can't go over everything in this, and I wouldn't want to keep you here to go over every single feat. There's more than enough other content creators who are doing lists and hot takes and everything. But I do want to get one last thing.
Sure.
What is your one favorite part of this class? And what is your one biggest?
I'm going to break your rules. I'm going to give two on each thing.
Sure.
Okay, my two favorite parts of this class. One, I love that it's being reimagined as a martial class rather than a spellcaster. And one of the reasons I love that is because legendary kineticist is still out there. So if when you envision a kineticist, a master of the elements, do you envision a more martially Avatar the Last Airbender, you know, jumping around and punching sort of character? Or do you imagine more of a carry just like standing there and everything lights on fire kind of character? And you've got your options, right? You have a full spellcaster version of the class and you have this martial one. And I think the martial one is really cool and approachable for someone who wants that cool elemental stuff, but doesn't have to deal with, wait, Scorching Ray is different than, wait, I have to attack different unit. Why can't I attack three rays at the same person? I don't understand this. And they don't have to deal with all that. They can just be like, I punch fire and that's cool. And I don't have to worry about it. The second thing that I really love are the names of these feats, specifically the highest level feats. Air has one called Infinite Expanse of Bluest Heaven. What? Like, just the name, it's just so cool. Earth's The like Shattered Mountain Weeps, which is literally rocks fall and everyone dies. Like Horrid Ignition for fire, Solar Detonation. Wait, what? Yeah, no, you conjure a tiny sun and it blows up. Like, some of these are really cool concepts, ideas, and names. And I really love the creativity that has gone into thinking up new and interesting ways that a master of elements can use their power. My two critiques are that because this is a martial, Constitution is a key ability score, and it has absolutely no place there. I still want to see it in the class. I still want to see it important, but it shouldn't be the key ability score if you are making a martial. Martials need strength or dex all across the board. And you know, pick one, pick both, but you know, either or, but you need to have that as your key ability score because Constitution is actively hampering this class. Quick side tangent. I had a bunch of damage analyses when I was putting together Legendary Kineticist because I wanted to make sure that my spellcaster who used cantrips wasn't outpowering its peers, which I saw as like archers and other range damage specialists. So I was comparing it to archer builds and it falls on the single target damage scale. It falls far behind them and on purpose because that's not its niche. But I wanted to make sure that it wasn't outshining them and that archers and stuff had way better single target damage, and they do. I then was like, you know what? I have all this math already worked out. Let's add the kineticist playtest to it. And it cannot keep up. It is no, it cannot do anything. Like a fighter with a bow does better pound for pound than the kineticist playtest. It just can't keep up. Oh, that's a fighter. Fine. A ranger with a bow can't keep up. Or it can't keep up with a ranger for the bow. It just can't do it. So they need to fix the mechanics. They need to fix it so that it is functional as a marshal. And that's what I want to see. I want to see a marshal that can go out there and punch water at people and do awesome stuff and be just as good as that ranger double wielding hand axes. I want to see it, but yeah. I'm not seeing it right now. My other critique that I had is right now its stats sit somewhere between an alchemist and a ranger, because I think they don't know if they want it to be a spellcaster or a marshal, but they're leaning toward marshal. I would just mimic the ranger build in terms of when does it get attack bonuses, when does it get armor bonuses, just align it with where ranger is and have it be another marshal in the fold. And I think it'll do great.
Well, thank you so much for being with us, Vanessa. Sure. Thank you for going over this playtest. If you too want to try out the Legendary Kineticist, you can find it on Paizo's website by searching for Legendary Kineticist. I got it there. It's in my digital downloads. So that's one place. Vanessa, what other stuff should people be looking out from you? You know, what new projects are coming out?
There's Redacted and also Redacted and also that thing that's still under NDA. So just look for those. But if you want to chat with me about Kineticist, the best places to do that are either on Twitter at NinjaCatVanessa or on the No Direction Discord server, which you can get to from nodirectionpodcast.com and click on the Discord link and just at me in there and we will chat about Kineticist all day long. I love doing it. I have posted many analyzing rant on the Facebook message boards as well. So come reach out and talk to me. The only other thing that I would theoretically tease is something that I can't announce yet. Is I have this little game company called Ninja Cat Games, and we're working on like pixely indie games. Like if you like the Sega Genesis Super Nintendo style era games, that's what we're aiming to create. And even though we have nothing to announce, you can definitely follow us so that you are amongst the first to get announcements. And that is over on Twitter at Ninja_CatGames.
So if you are trying out the playtest, make sure to go to Pathfinder 2e subreddit, where we currently have a pinned post about the playtest where you can leave your feedback. Of course, make sure to let Paizo know on their official surveys. Finally, if you want to have a place on the podcast, remember to send me a community use policy agreement. There are instructions in the show notes below about how to submit one of those. And then let me know what you think of the playtest by sending me a message or a tweet on Twitter at RuleLord2E. But until next session...
If you want to find the path, you need no direction.
There we go.
Wait, this is the wrong show. Sorry, hold on. Don't let the rules rule you.